Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Great to have you along today. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls. Chris is at the phones. And Ted, we're going to talk today about disciplining our kids, which I know probably hardly ever have to do, right?
Oh, yeah, right. I need help almost every day with this.
Do you? Really? Good. So this will be a great program for you. I just think about Robert Orban's statement said, never raise your hand to your kids because it leaves your midsection exposed. But anyways, I don't know that I did all that well. My dad, who actually we're just talking with, actually a listener today, my dad passed away on Father's Day about 11 years ago, and actually after some illness, so it was probably best Father's Day for him, I think, but certainly different for us. But, you know, we probably don't do it much different than the way our dads did it, right?
Yeah.
Where we try and react, maybe with the pendulum swings the other way. I don't know.
Yeah, it can. Yeah, you learn from an early age and just that must be the way to do it, right? But it doesn't have to be. Right?
No. Well, we're going to find out the discipline that connects with your child's heart. That's going to be our conversation today. Speaking of passing away, I did talk with a listener just this morning, Clora, who just had a nice chat. She's a listener, said her sister Carmen passed away a year ago today, and they were both single ladies that took care of an aunt, and they did care for her, and said she purposely dedicated her life to the Lord, a perfect portrait of a single woman living for the Lord. So anyway, just wanted to acknowledge Carmen.
Yeah, and, hearts go out to her.
Yeah, so hope that you've had a good weekend, and you were doing soccer with the kids.
Soccer
right?
tournament down in Rochester, Minnesota, busy time, and the discipline was in play. 11 o'clock curfew, lights out, in your rooms, got a game tomorrow.
Way to go. Very impressive. So, yeah, okay. Well, no, we're going to talk about building faith, wisdom, and character in the messes of daily life,
which is
where we all live when it comes to discipline. So let me introduce our guests today. They're in studio. Excited to talk with Jim and Lynn Jackson. They've conducted over, thousands of workshops for parents and privately coached parents for the last 15 or more years. And they speak on a variety of parenting issues, frequently speaking at churches and parenting conferences. And they have three children and live in Minnesota, and they're in studio today. Jim, Lynn, welcome. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Great to be here.
I'll have you move that mic over just a little bit more there so we can, because we don't want Jim to just hog the conversation.
And he will. He will.
He
absolutely
would.
Absolutely.
Would.
In fact, I put the mic over there.
All right. So stay tuned for the second half of the show, which will be getting along in marriage. So that's it. Okay.
We have a long car drive ahead of us, honey.
Right, so, let's say we want to – so let just by way of introduction, because we're going to talk about discipline that connects with your child's heart, which is the title of a wonderful book and a wonderful resource. We do have some copies to give away. Talk about that in a moment, but talk a little bit about your parenting expertise, I guess, and a little bit about family. And was this one of those books that you wrote after you had children or before you had children? So you change it all now?
Well, we come to it with our professional experience as an occupational therapist for myself and Jim, with years and years of experience in the trenches with at-risk youth. Mm-hmm. But really, our claim to fame is our three kids, because we like to joke that they were straight-A kids before they ever hit school. And those straight A's were allergies, asthma, acid reflux, and ADHD.
Mm-hmm,
and they all had those wired nervous systems that made them like three little monkeys just jumping off the walls all the time. So tried our patients, particularly mine, significantly.
Yeah. So this book was written upon reflection, much of it about the challenges, the mistakes we made, the things we learned in our efforts to reconcile a lot of those mistakes. We did early on decide we wanted to put a stake in the ground around being a connected family, a family that is connected in love and enjoyable experiences, and we're going to fight for connection before anything else, connection with God, connection with each other, connected to the purposes God has for us in the world, in our communities, in our churches, and in that journey, working with other people's kids as well as paying attention to how that was going for us, we learned a lot of things, and we started sharing these things in the context of my youth work, really. I was working at a place locally called Treehouse. Love Treehouse. A shout out to my friends over there. And maybe the best youth work going on in our country in that organization. And I was learning about working with kids, but we were also starting to share what we were learning with the parents of those kids. And that's what God used to lead to a call in 2002 to start Connected Families and sort of put all of this together as we were sharing what we were learning with parents in a way that was clearly blessing them, helping them, transforming how they not just disciplined their kids really, but how they got along and related to their kids right from the young ages through their teen years.
Well, the book has not only a lot of your story, but a lot of other stories and examples, so it's easily relatable. And I want to talk about the first word, discipline, that connects. Maybe we need to define it. How's discipline different than punishment?
Well, punishment is simply about inflicting enough pain so that hopefully my child won't do this behavior again, or at least while I'm around. And discipline, the root is to disciple or teach. So it's really about helping kids to take responsibility for their actions after they've had a chance to really understand what they've done wrong.
Yeah, we started paying attention not only to were our kids doing what we wanted them to do, but what were they really learning as we were disciplining them? Because as big people, especially with little ones, it's easy for us to get our way with them. It's easy for us to treat them in ways that they'll do what we want them to do because they're scared of what will happen if they don't, rather than because they're learning to value right from wrong and wanting to do the right thing for the right reasons. And as we learned to just pay attention to what our kids were learning, it became clear to us that just because they were doing what we wanted them to do because of the punishment that we had administered didn't mean their hearts were changing. It didn't mean that they were having hearts more open to our love, to God's love, to bigger purposes. It just meant that they were complying with all this big effort that we were sending their way. And like Lynn said, then they would struggle at school with these behaviors because the teachers would deal differently with them, or they would go on to the playgrounds and no grown-ups around. They weren't motivated to do right because of the punishment they'd received. They were just motivated not to get punished, so they took their misbehavior out from under the noses of the watching adults.
Just think about that. You know, we often, I guess, maybe don't hear it so much anymore, but, you know, I've said as a parent, I guess, we'll teach you a lesson. Well, but I guess upon feedback, the lesson wasn't what we thought,
was
it?
What's the lesson? Well, and we like to demonstrate this, if we could, by doing role plays.
All right.
And by sort of really reliving our own past as parents and some of the scripts we heard and said ourselves and that our kids said. And we hear parents as they report to us all the time tell us this is how it goes. And so we want to kind of demonstrate and then take apart a little bit of what's going on when typical discipline happens.
All right.
So in order to do that, we have to make something up. And so you got to help us here a little bit, maybe both of you guys, if you want. You know your audience, so you need to pick the age of a child. Do you want to be the parent, Lynn, this time, or do you want to be the child?
I can be the parent.
Okay, Lynn's going to be the parent.
All right.
And I'm going to be a child playing what age?
Well, let's go with you. You want to go 1 year?
Yeah, 15.
15.
15-year-old child.
I don't know if that's teenagers. You sure do.
It's too late, honey. You just signed up for that course. So I'm going to be a 15-year-old misbehaving in what way? What way to, you know, common sort of a misbehavior, not an over-the-top, way out of control specialist type of thing, but just relatable.
Hypothetically, not getting out of bed on time, going back to bed after the alarm goes off.
Not getting out of bed, going back to bed.
And then being sassy when they're
and a little sass when here we are, it's summer, right? So this is a real thing in summer for teenagers. It's summer, it's Tuesday, and I'm sleeping in, and I'm really not sleeping in. I got my phone with me and I'm looking at stuff, but when mom comes in the door
so I have a question though. What would be the actual discipline situation? Is it the
sass? What should I be doing instead?
Well, or is there an obligation he should be doing that he's shirking?
Sure, we don't want to have to remind you over and over to get up and get out of bed and get moving. And when we do, you certainly better not have a tone with us. How about that?
So you got – and there's – okay. And then are there chores to do, or do you just got to get out of bed for – I mean, as a 15-year-old already, I'm saying, well, why do I get out of bed if there's no reason to get out of bed?
Right, right, right.
Why do you care if I'm
– I've been getting up early also.
Yeah, sure. Obligations to fulfill.
So obligations.
Okay, all right. Now I got it.
Okay. So it's and the rule is,
We are leaving at 10, and you need to have your chores done before we leave.
Okay.
All right.
And what time is it?
9:30.
And I'm still in bed. I'm just looking at my smartphone. I got my head on the pillow, covers up.
Jim, what are you doing? We gotta be going.
Mom,
you don't have your chores done. The dishwasher's a mess.
Mom, summer just started. This is stupid. Can't we just
wait a minute?
Have a few days of a break. God, you're just on me all the time.
You don't have to be disrespectful right now. I'm reminding you that you should have been out of bed a half an hour ago.
Mom, I can get ready in 10 minutes.
You can.
I don't know what the big deal is.
Yeah,
and
but
the
you can't get your
wait.
Chores done.
Why do they have to be done before we leave?
I'm so tired of your irresponsibility.
I'm so tired of your nagging all
what?
The time. Gosh.
That is not okay. You may not talk to me that way. You lose
and
that
what if
screen.
I do? What
do
you, hey, give me that back.
No.
Don't take my... Mom, that's
no,
mine.
That's
I got to talk to some people
no.
about my plans
when,
later.
You can talk to me later about a plan to get it back when you've done all your chores.
I can't even stand this. I'm going to go live with Uncle Bob or something.
Yeah, good chance he'll take you in.
All right, time out. I can see Lynn's getting stressed out by this.
Yeah. Just even role-playing the idea.
There's a little anxiety
sure.
in the room. So, when we do this sort of thing, we haven't played that one exactly yeah. before,
never.
But when we do this sort of thing live with audiences... You know, parents, number they clap for us.
Sure, yeah.
Why do they clap? It's because, yeah, that's what it's like at our house. Well, have you had, and people say this all the time, have you got a tape recorder running in our house where you're just mirroring what you saw in our home yesterday? Well, it's because, number one, that default, it really is pretty typical for all of us. Like, the parent gets into this controlling posture. The child is just reacting and responding. They want to be responsible for their own lives and don't like this nagging. And so there's almost like a teenager throws a stiff arm out at the parents. And it's typical. It's common. And so what we like to ask is not what should the parent do to make this stop. And that's an important question, by the way, and we want to get there. How do we help this child be accountable for their lives and do what they're supposed to do and use the gifts God gave them to do what God gave them the gifts to do? But there's a question that it's been really helpful to unpack before we talk about what should I do, and that's what's going on here. What's going on? What is this child learning right now? What is this child learning about how mom is handling this? What is this child learning at the core, whether they're 3 years old or whether they're 15 years old or even older? When parents talk to their kids in disciplinary sorts of ways, their kids are not just hearing about what they should do. They're hearing about who the parent thinks they are. And parents don't say, well, sometimes they do. You're lazy. You're irresponsible. You're disrespectful. Stop that. But, you know, a lot of times the parents' words don't fill in the blank. Child, you are blank right now. But if we were to think about that together for a minute, and you're me, so put yourself in my shoes, what are the you are messages I'm getting from mom right now in the middle of this discipline? Parents will tell us, well, if I'm in my child's shoes, they're getting the message, you are a pain, you are a problem, you are lazy, you don't listen. And a lot of those things might even be true, but if we're not thoughtful that that's the message we're communicating to our kids begin to wear that message as an identity. Like, if mom thinks this is how I am, if dad thinks this is who I am, well, then I'm going to act that way. Why would I act any different? This is who I am. And so we invite parents to think about what are those you are messages and what are the you are messages you'd like to put in place to counter those? Because usually when we ask parents this question, the messages they say their kids are receiving are not the ones they want them to. So then we ask parents, well, what messages, if you could just take control of the messages your kids are getting from you, messages that are rooted and grounded based in God's word, what would those messages be? And I mean, I even ask you, Neil, right now.
Well, and I'm going to invite you to tell us in about 90 seconds because we're going to take a break. So, and that'll keep people hanging on. We do that in radio. We just this is cliffhanger.
We gotta stop.
Sure. All right.
It's good.
We're going to take a quick break. I do want to mention that we got 3 copies of Jim and Lynn's book to give away. Discipline That Connects with Your Child's Heart. It's building faith, wisdom, and character in the messes of daily life. Would love to have you sign up for a copy. It's going to be practical and helpful, as you can already tell. And stick around here. We'll get to those messages. What is the message that we want to communicate to our kids, no matter what the discipline issues might be? You can sign up for a copy of the book. You can join the conversation with a phone call. Here's the number, 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. More with Jim and Lynn Jackson from ConnectedFamilies.org. You can find out more about their ministry online, ConnectedToFamilies.org. And we'll continue Connecting Faith in a moment.
Good, good Father, it's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am.
Now, thankfully, we do have a model, right? God our Father. Who loves us unconditionally. That is, we're going to find out, an important message as we talk about how we discipline our children in a way that connects with their child's heart. We're talking discipline that connects with your child's heart, the title of a great book from Jim and Lynn Jackson. Jim and Lynn are coaching and teaching in a variety of ways, and they've written this wonderful book. They have a ministry called Connected Families. You find out more at ConnectedFamilies.org. And we kind of left people hanging there as we talk about the lessons the messages that our kids are hearing may not be the ones that we want them to hear. So I know that's a key part of your teaching. Let's talk about the right messages.
Yeah, so we invite parents to wonder about this question. If when you disciplined your children, they came away believing who they are, believing the messages about who they are that you want them to believe that are tied to God's word, what would those messages be? And parents would give us great big long lists. And what we've done for the sake of simplicity and ease of memory, and parents tell us all the time, narrowing it to four and then having this in my memory when I discipline my kids is so helpful. And the four messages are simply this. Child, when I discipline you, really always, but especially when I discipline you, I want you to know and remember you're safe with me. I'm for you, not against you. You're loved, no matter what. That's the second message. Child, you are loved, no matter how you behave, no matter how late you sleep, no matter what you do with your smartphone. I want you to know none of that can cost you my love for you. And those first two messages we call the messages of grace that are so important for parents to consider as they discipline kids, because we think of discipline as the thing we do to keep our kids accountable, and yes, it is, but if we miss the messages of grace, then that tends to lead to more of a performance-based and build resentments, and it's just behavioral. It's not going after the heart. So then the next two messages.
You are called and capable, and this is where parents can find and build strengths in their kids, even in misbehavior. So the way that they misbehave, somehow they're tapping into their strengths to do it. And we can kind of identify that and turn it in good directions, as well as soften kids' hearts to our real discipline as we just acknowledge there's some strength under this misbehavior here. And then the last message is you are responsible for your actions and ultimately for your life. So we'd like to teach parents effective discipline puts responsibility on the child to right their wrongs. So much the parents to manage their behavior, but it puts responsibility in the child to right their wrongs.
So Lynn is going to go into we're going to do the do-over. We're going to have and we actually talk in the book a lot about do-overs and the power of do-overs. Like when I didn't parent the way I wanted to, and candidly, when I don't husband the way I want to, a lot of times I'll recognize that based on this way of thinking and then say, you know what, I didn't like how I did that. I realize I wasn't as safe as I wanted to be. Can I have a do-over? And have a do-over. So there's a lot of good learning in do-overs, and we're going to invite Lynn to have a do-over with this parenting thing and invite listeners to consider as you observe this, how does she communicate these messages to me? Jimmy, you're safe, you're loved, you're capable, and you're responsible for your life and for what's going on here. Pay attention to whether she communicates these messages or not as she comes in the door and I'm looking at my smartphone pretending to still be asleep.
Are we doing it over on the same day or the next day?
Next day.
Yeah. Okay. So the next day. So I'm realizing I don't want to do this the same way. So I probably even stop at the door and go, Lord, help me. I don't want this to go the way it did yesterday. Hey, bud. Good morning. Good to see you.
And I hide my phone and put my hand
in. You really snuck that phone away there pretty quick, didn't you? You're fast with sleight of hand.
Whatever.
Hey, what time
Mom,
is it?
I'm sleeping.
Oh.
Mom.
You are pretty sleepy, but alert, it's 9:30.
Yeah, whatever.
And we're supposed to leave for soccer camp
at
10.
I'll be ready.
Oh,
just leave me alone.
Okay, well, do you want to know what will happen if the chores aren't done that you've committed to?
What? What do you mean? What are you talking about? I have to be to soccer practice, Mom.
Yeah, well.
I can't miss soccer practice.
Well, you can take a breath and remember, what's the chore that you're supposed to do in the morning related to dishes?
This is stupid. You know the answer. I have to load the dishes.
Right. Good. Duh. All right. You got her. So we won't be leaving for soccer camp until that's done. So you can get ready as fast or as slow as you want, bud. But I love you. And I bet you're going to be really quick.
I can't be late, Mom. I can't be late.
Well, I'll be ready in the car when the dishes are done. So we'll see you. Love you.
Whatever.
Yeah. And in the car, we'd chat a little bit about attitude. But I wouldn't put that. Yeah. I wouldn't bring that up right away.
I know
away.
One of the questions that would come right away is, well, what if he doesn't? What if he's not in the car at 10?
He's late to soccer camp.
So then he's late to soccer camp. Yeah. One of the things, especially with teenagers, man, the more that we start riding them to do the thing that they're supposed to do and talk to them about it, clearly she told me yesterday what was expected. And it could be that today there's just no ride. I mean, it could be but that's a lot harder to role play on the radio. But you know, so the question is, what are the messages I'm getting based on what she did? Not did she do it right, but what messages did I get? How did she do something that communicated to me, Jimmy, you were safe compared to the day before?
Yeah, she just talked about, you know, you're, you know, glad to see you, sleeping well, you know.
So there's like a pleasant countenance. Yeah. She was so much calmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
She didn't let my upsetness get her upset, which is a huge thing. She set a boundary between my upsetness and her upsetness. Yeah. That helped me feel safe and realize this upsetness is not about her. It's about me. She put her hand on my shoulder. She rubbed me. She was affectionate. She affirmed some things about the phone, even though it wasn't okay. She set some boundaries. You're capable. You can do this. You can be on time or you can be late. And so there's the messages. You are capable. You're responsible. And if you're not in the car when you're supposed to be, then guess what? You're going to be late. But I can't be late. Well, it's your responsibility, not mine, to get this stuff done. I mean, she didn't say those words, but that's what was implied. And in doing so, communicating to me, you're responsible for this.
Now, if it hadn't been so neat, like it was his event that we were going to, and maybe I needed to get to work and drop him off at school or something, and it was my time urgency, I might have said, okay, well, the chore didn't get done this morning, so you're going to get an extra chance to practice responsibility and do two chores before you get your phone back. Something like that.
Sure. All right. We're going to take a break coming up again. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about, you know, maybe there's some things that you are just tracking with there. Maybe it's about, you know, how do we avoid those triggers that set you off. And there's an old saying in golf that you start out low and slow. They have something very similar. We're going to talk about that as well.
Jim loves talking about golf.
We're going to find out, does Because I Said So still work? If not, why not? Anyway, we're talking with Jim and Lynn Jackson. They've written a wonderful book called Discipline That Connects with Your Child's Heart. It's building faith, wisdom, and character in the messes of daily life. We've got some copies to give away. Love to make sure you get one. You can sign up with a phone call, 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we'll get a copy of this to you. We'll do a drawing here at the top of the hour. And if you have a question for Jim and Lynn, you're welcome to join in with that as well. Jim and Lynn Jackson from Connected Families. Find out more about them. Their ministry at connectedfamilies.org. They speak frequently in churches and parenting conferences, and they're with us today in studio here on Connecting Faith. It's a foundational message. You are safe with me. You are loved no matter what. You are called and capable. You are responsible for your actions. Those are the four messages that provide the kind of the framework for the book, Discipline That Connects with Your Child's Heart. Jim and Lynn Jackson in studio today here on Connecting Faith. We've got some copies of the book to give away, and you can sign up for that with a phone call. So we've talked a little bit about some of those four messages. I mentioned golf, and you know, Jim, apparently we could talk for quite a while about that. But, you know, in golf, it's low and slow. You have kind of a version of that when it comes to discipline. Say more.
Well, our impulse when our kids misbehave is to, at least mine was, and still is to this day, even having taught this stuff for over 20 years, my impulse when my grown kids misbehave, much less my young ones, is to put, you know, is to just get upset inside. I can feel my blood start to boil just a little and take a step forward and furrow my brow and state my case. What are you thinking? What are you doing? And when I do that, I really
is, by the way, is that not a good question? I mean, it seems like such a good. What are you thinking?
What are you doing? What are you thinking? What is wrong with you? You know, all
it's
these
the real underlying question. Okay. What's
well,
wrong?
And the truth is, it doesn't really matter what words I use if my posture to the one I'm approaching feels threatening. Their brain changes gears. Mm-hmm. Their brain goes into protective mode. It goes into what the brain research people call fight or flight.
Yeah.
And it compels a whole different sort of learning and responses than if I approach them in ways that feel safe to them. So if I'm fast and large and loud, I scare people. And they'll do maybe what I want them to do because they're scared, but not because their brain is learning the way that I'd like it to learn.
And if they do submit to our angry power, really what we're teaching them is just that. Submit to angry, intimidating people. And that's not what we want to teach our kids. So we help parents to kind of reverse that and think of the opposite of fast, large, and loud is slow, low, and listen. And slow is about buy some time, take a break, sit down, get to a different room, do something to just slow the action, even consciously speak slowly. And then low is about getting out of the intimidating postures of, you know, hands on hips, pointing a finger, all the stuff that actually gets our brains more into fight or flight in an effort to intimidate our kids. So we do the opposite and we get low. We sit down, maybe even get down on the floor with a youngster. Put your feet up. We probably haven't screamed at our kids in the recliner very often because it's not a brain loop. So, and then to just prepare our hearts to listen. First, listen to the Lord. God, you know, what's the opportunity in this situation? That quick prayer really began to change my parenting as I would just pray that quick prayer and go in, breathe a deep breath and listen to my child, listen to my heart for my child. Just have a listening heart. And that really, this is so well captured in James 1:19, where it says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry.
Yeah, but that wasn't a verse for me as a child.
Yeah, right.
We were kind of joking about, you know, the question, what were you thinking? But I know there are some questions that we can ask our kids, right? That would be more effective.
Well, and you can even ask that one. Yeah. But are you doing it with the furrowed brow and fast, large, and loud? Or are you doing it from slow, low, and listen? So you can hear the difference. What are you thinking versus, hey, bud, what are you thinking about right now?
Or what was going on in your heart before you just did this thing? I mean, that shows caring. It helps kids to calm down and really start to look, what was going on in my heart, which is really where we want to connect with them.
Well, I do want to get to, because one of the things you talk about is seeing the possible strength in the midst of a misbehavior, which just feels totally foreign. It's like, well, I don't know. I don't know if I want to call that out. Say, you know, great job being, disobedient. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, right. we learned this in our context of work with other people's kids. And particularly me and my work with high-risk kids. If I were to just deal with a young person's misbehavior as a totally bad thing, it's all bad. Everything about what you just did is bad. There's not one good thing about it. Number one, it probably was a judgment made without seeking much understanding. Number two, it would assuredly lead to that young person never coming back to the outreach again. I'd lost my opportunity to speak into his or her life. And so when I recognized that the young one, 14-year-old, who would look me in the eye and go, this is stupid, I hate this swearing place, it took some courage to do that to the guy in charge. It took some boldness. It took some ability to articulate words. And I actually got to a point in the youth outreach where I learned that if I said, that is not okay, you may not talk to me that way. And if you speak another word like that, you are not coming back here next week. Well, they wouldn't come back here next week and they wouldn't come back here the week after or the week after or the week after. But if I learned to say to that young person, wow, you really know what's important to you right now, don't you? And you've got some very strong feelings about this, don't you? It would take the wind out of the sails of their defiance. and they would back away and they would look at me like I was some kind of creature from outer space and go, what are you talking about? I hear you saying some really important things. The way you're saying them, however, makes it really hard to hear it. It's very dishonoring and disrespectful. And I'd like you to settle down a little bit and give a word at using that great ability that you've got to speak that sort of words in a more honoring way. Put your persistence about getting what you want into figuring out how to be more honoring. Well, I don't even know how to do that, which is an interesting statement. Oftentimes kids, especially those sorts of kids, but even our own kids, they're doing the best they know how to do to express difficult feelings and emotions, and they get punished for it because it's not the way we'd like it to look. It's not refined. It's not respectful. It's not soft. It's not whatever we think it should be. And so we tell them to stop it and go to the room without helping them learn that there's a good gift there. It's just coming out twisted by their sin, but it still is. God built them with that gift.
So a practical parenting example of this was with our son, who used to boss his two younger siblings around like crazy. And I would boss him to try to get him to stop bossing his siblings, and we were stuck. And then the day I said, Daniel, I think you have a really strong gift of leadership. You have creative ideas. You have strong thoughts. You have passionate expressiveness. But how you're using them isn't really helping you in your relationship with your siblings. And I don't believe it's preparing you for the cool ways God wants to use your leadership abilities. Would you like some help in learning some better ways to do this? He was all ears. I was discipling him. I was disciplining him, teaching him in the midst of his misbehavior. So when we can see the creative mind behind a liar, a child that lies, or the persistence behind a whiner, and still deal with the misbehavior, but acknowledge there's some strength underneath that misbehavior, it really wins the hearts of our kids.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about, you know, we somehow assume, I guess, that the stronger the consequence, the shorter the disobedience, right? We just come down really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Not necessarily the case, though.
No. For one thing, the stronger the consequences, oftentimes the more discouraged the child gets because they feel so crushed, so intimidated, so bossed around. And so oftentimes their misbehavior goes sideways, underground. And we had mentored a young woman for a while that had been very harshly disciplined for disobedience. And she was pretty compliant while she was at home. But when she left home, she lost it and just started making all sorts of misbehaving
decisions.
She
had no ability to control herself. She relied on the punishment of those around her to keep her in line.
And she said one time in tears, she said, I have no idea who I am or how to make a wise decision. So we might control their behavior for the short term, but we're not building a wise, resilient person. And we love Luke 17 because
Luke 1:17.
1:17, thank you. It's talking about John the Baptist. His job description to prepare the way for Christ was, he will come in the spirit and power of Elijah to, number one, turn the hearts of the children to their parents, or turn the hearts of the parents to their children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous. It doesn't say the disobedient to obedience. It says to the wisdom of the righteous. God wants people that love the wisdom of his word and his ways.
And the road to true obedience must flow through wisdom.
And the
otherwise,
connected
it's compliance.
Heart. Connected heart
connected
and wisdom.
Heart. Yeah. When we talk about consequences, we like to think of a biblical idea in Galatians 6:1. We're told that if we, the people in the church who have just been listening and reading Paul's teaching, fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. That's 5:22 in Galatians 6 and verse 1 says, and those, if you catch someone who is, what's the word?
If anyone is sinning,
if you catch one in sin, you who walk by the Spirit should restore that person gently. And restoring is the goal of correction, of discipline. It's not just a bad feeling. Punishment makes you feel bad for what you did, hoping that bad feeling will lead you to do right again in the future. Restoration means that I help the person I'm disciplining to understand what's been made wrong and their responsibility to make right what they made wrong. And so when we invite parents to think through how does your discipline, removal of privileges, taking things away, having kids apologize, how does it truly help them value making right what they've made wrong? feeling remorse about it, feeling repentance about it, wanting to apologize, not because somebody says you have to in order to get on with life, but because I feel like I did something I ought not do and I better apologize.
And I know I'll feel better when I apologize. Yeah. To celebrate when our kids make it right with each other or with someone that they've wronged helps them to understand it feels really good to just repent and reconcile and move on in grace.
Yeah, the last section of our book, about a fourth of it, is just practical ideas about how to put these four messages into play with what we've heard from parents are about the 15 most common misbehaviors that they deal with, whether it's sibling issues or meals or chores or bedtime or
screen
getting up
time.
On time, screen time. How do you help a child know they're safe and know they're loved and know they're capable of choosing wisdom here and know that they're responsible for the choices they're making to make right what they've made wrong? And
we just have a minute or so left. I'm thinking, you know, some of us as parents grew up in an era where, you know, personal responsibility, you know, wasn't necessarily, we were kind of in that generation where suddenly we didn't have to be personally responsible. So does that make a difference in how we parent?
Well, of course it does. And we hear parents all the time say to us, why do I have to think about all this parenting stuff you're telling me about? My parents didn't think about any of this stuff, and I turned out okay. And my next question is, did you really?
Are you sure? Yeah. Are
you sure about that?
Can we talk about that for a little longer? Well, you know what I mean. I mean, sure. I got a job, and I've stayed married, and it's all fine. Well, the price these days that parents pay for losing the hearts of their kids is much higher than it's ever been because of how quickly our kids get drawn into the culture of the world and the world's way and the world's way of thinking about things and the world's way of doing things and the ability kids have to commiserate with each other in real time right now. I mean, when my dad treated me in a way I didn't like, I'd go outside, I'd find some friends, nobody talked about it. Right? And then I'd come back home for dinner when the dinner bell rang because if I didn't, what would happen? I wouldn't get any dinner.
Yeah.
And that was how it went. And it was pretty simple. Well, these days, kids go out. They don't go out and not talk about it. They Google it. They find their friends. They figure out, and then they figure out what the plan is to be even more rebellious with their parents than their parents ever dreamed of.
And media tells them every show is much more about poor parenting than Father's Knows
Best.
So
let's win our kids' hearts, not just shape their behavior. Yeah. It's the bottom line goal of all this for us.
Building faith, wisdom, and character in the messes of daily life. You know, we all experienced a variety of messes, probably a lot by our own making, actually. But how do we do it? Discipline that connects with your child's heart. That's what we've been talking about today. And I want to just recommend the work and the insights of Jim and Lynn Jackson. ConnectedFamilies.org. They'll find a bunch of resources there, I'm assuming, and find out your speaking schedule, all those things.
All the things.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Check it out. ConnectedFamilies.org. Jim and Lynn Jackson in studio today. We do have some copies of the book to give away. And again, we'll do it at the top of the hour. You can sign up to be in the drawing with a phone call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. You guys got a little road trip coming up. Safe travels to you. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be on the campus of my alma mater.
Good. Well, glad to have you back and come back again sometime soon.
Would love to.
Look forward to talking more. Get some wise advice from Jim and Lynn Jackson today on Connecting Faith. Coming up in a moment, it's our regular Monday visit with Lisa Marone, so stay tuned for that. That was at the heart of the message from Jim and Lynn Jackson about grace, right? You're safe with me. You're loved no matter what. That's grace. And there's also the responsibility side. You're responsible for your actions, but you're called and capable. So I recommend the book Disciplines That Connect With Your Child's Heart. Well, speaking of books, our guest, Lisa Marone, who joins us every other Monday, has written books on sleep, on back and neck pain, on diabetes, on headaches, migraines, overeating. One of her latest books, a great book called Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake, Seven Steps for Living Strong, Loving God, and Serving Others. And we get the opportunity to chat with Lisa every other Monday. Lisa's a physical therapist, professor, and author, and speaker who encourages us to get healthy for heaven's sake. And every Monday, she has a Monday morning health tip. And so that comes out every Monday morning, and we have a chance to talk with her every other Monday. So welcome back, Lisa, to tell us about our Monday morning health tip.
Neil, Bill, great to be with you again. This week's Monday Morning Health Tip is really kind of off the beaten path of the things that we normally talk about. We're going to talk about pain today.
I love it, and not that I love pain. No, I don't enjoy pain at all, actually, which is why this will be such a good conversation. And I was thinking, oftentimes it's. Yeah, we don't think of pain until we see the pain chart at the doctor's office on the scale of 1 to 10. Is that the best way or maybe the most common way that we actually think about pain?
Well, we talk about it on a scale of 1 to 10. Also, if you've been in any of the emergency departments or hospitals, they're going to give your child a little pain scale, and it's going to have different, smiley and frowny faces, from like happy and smiling to totally miserable and crying. And I've even had adults sometimes when I ask them to quantify their pain on a scale of 1 to 10, they say, "Don't you have those smiley faces for me? I could choose one of those better."
Well, in fact, that is one of the ways in which I guess part of this we should probably back up. I mean, one of the reasons we need to talk about understanding our pain more is that, when we actually have a pain and we go see a therapist or a doctor, we should actually know what we're talking about.
Yes, Neil, that's why we're talking about this today, because so many of my patients come in, and as part of my initial evaluation, I'm asking them very specific questions about their pain. And the look on their face half the time is complete bewilderment. They know they're in my office because they have pain. They pretty much know, what part of their body is hurting. But as for giving me the specifics of that pain, they really haven't paid that much attention, they will say to me. And the reason I ask these questions and the reason I ask them to go home now this next week and pay attention to those things is because it helps me as a practitioner come up with an accurate diagnosis based upon how the pain presents and how it moves about the body, if you would. And it's going to also help me as I'm moving through treatment. I'm going to go back and I'm going to ask this patient the same questions as we're moving through treatment. And believe it or not, Neil, patients who come in an extreme amount of pain in different parts of their body actually forget where their pain was once it starts to go away. And so I've even had patients come in my office and tell me a couple of weeks later they are no better. And then I take out their chart and I say, "Well, do you still have that pain in your calf?" And they say, "Oh, no, I don't." And I say, "Well, what about that pain in the back of your thigh?" "Well, that's not there either." "And how about that pain in your hip?" "No, but my back is still really killing me."
Well, so let's dive in, because you mentioned quantity. So that 1 to 10 scale, is that a key factor? And
yeah.
Talk about some others.
Okay, sure, certainly. The quantity scale, that 1 to 10 scale, is very important because we want to know where the pain is and where it ranges from. Sometimes people will not have any pain during the day, and then it might creep up to a 5 or a 6 on a scale of 10. I have some patients who want to expand that scale of 10 to a 15, and I say, "No, 10 is the worst pain, so I believe you if you go up to a 10. So that quantity is important. The frequency is important also. I ask my patients, "Is your pain constant, is it intermittent, or is it occasional?" So how often are you having this pain? And many times people who have a lot of pain will tell me it's constant. And then I need to ask them some more specific questions. So if you lie down, do you still have your pain? And they'll say, "Oh, no, it doesn't happen when I lie down. But it is constant when I'm standing up." So as a practitioner, I need to know that is an intermittent pain. That is a pain that comes and goes in the body. A pain that is constant, that never changes based upon someone's position, is a really serious issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned sort of it doesn't bother me when I lie down. I guess you also talk about sort of, I guess, the real estate part of it too, right? I mean, where exactly that pain is.
Yeah, I've kind of coined this term in terms of pain, real estate, meaning how much body property does it take up? Because for someone to tell me that I have pain in my left arm is not as important to me or not as helpful as if they tell me, "Well, the pain only goes from my shoulder to my elbow," or "I have pain only in my forearm." Or if it's down their leg, I want to know that it's not just in their right thigh, but I want to know it only goes halfway down their thigh as opposed to it goes all the way down to their knee. So all of these things are going to help me understand what structures might be involved, how significant this issue is. And then as I'm hopefully helping this patient to heal, I want to know if they used to have thigh pain and it was at their knee, but now it's thigh pain, but it's only 3 inches below their buttock. I know I'm on track to doing a good thing for them. And so that real estate question is important as well.
Talking frequency, real estate, quantity. You also talk about quality. Somehow quality and pain doesn't seem like those should go together.
Yeah, right? No pain is good quality, right?
Yeah.
So we're not really talking good and bad quality. But what we're talking about is how would you describe your pain? So I want to know, is a pain dull? Is it sharp? Might it be shooting or electrical? That's going to start me thinking, well, this is probably some nerve that's getting compressed if something is an electrical shooting sort of pain. If a patient describes it as a throbbing pain, I know there's some type of inflammation. That's a pain that kind of goes from like 3 to 6 to 3 to 6, that kind of thumping situation. I'll also ask, do they have a burning sensation? Is their skin sensitive to the touch? Do they have tingling, which would be like a pins and needles, like when your foot is waking up from having fallen asleep? Or do they have outright numbness, which would mean they've lost some sensitivity when they stroke their skin in that area? And so those things are also going to help me understand what structures might be involved and what's the intensity of this patient's symptoms. Because I need to know if this person is highly reactive to pain, that's going to make me treat them with a lot of caution, I should say. That's very important.
As you said, I mean, that if we can come with more detail, right? I mean, even just if it's dull, it's sharp, it's shooting, it's constant, it's intermittent, it's occasional, all those things are going to help you a better diagnose. And obviously, we're talking with our medical professionals or our therapist. The clearer we give you information, the better you're going to be able to come up with a treatment.
Absolutely. Whether you're showing up in the emergency department, in your primary care physician's office, your physical therapist's office, having this kind of information to share with us will help us to diagnose you, will help us to set a treatment path for you that's going to be best suited for your particular situation. And it's going to help us to know, as we reassess you over time, are you improving? And so the last area, Neil, I would say is, what's the behavior of your pain? And what I mean by that is not, is it well-behaved, but, you know, does the pain wake you up at night? If people are woken up at night by their pain, it's a really significant issue. Is it positional dependent, meaning do I only get pain in my leg when I'm sitting? Do I only get pain in my back when I'm walking? Again, these are going to help us, these kind of pain behaviors are going to help your practitioner understand what is the cause. And once we understand the cause, then we can improve your outcome.
And I guess I was...
So frequency, yeah.
Yeah, frequency, quantity, quality, behavior, another one as well. I'm wondering, you know, do you find some people that just, well, they don't take pain seriously? They think, well, I'll just learn to live with it?
Yeah, I do have some patients that have only come into physical therapy because they're nearly crippled by their pain. And so pain is a warning system that God has given us in our bodies to tell us that something is wrong. It's like the red light on your dashboard. You know, the stronger your pain gets, you know, your red light on your dashboard goes from static to starts flashing at you. You know, if you start to lose sleep because of it, you can't find a position of comfort anymore, and your pain on that intensity or quantity scale is rising. It used to be a 2, now it's a 7. Your body is telling you that something is wrong, and so pain is never good to ignore. So sometimes pain can be very serious. And so there are certain cancers that are going to look like physical pain in your body. Like as if you had a shoulder pain. I had a patient who had a pain in her shoulder and it was a tumor. But if you don't go to your doctor and you don't have that looked at, no one can ask you the appropriate questions and find out what's actually going on. So always better to take your pain seriously, Neil.
Take your pain seriously. Understand how to better, more effectively diagnose it, to help your medical professional, your therapist know. And as Lisa Marone tells us regularly, she wants it to get healthy, for heaven's sake, because there's a lot of work to do serving the Lord and serving others. Lisa is a physical therapist, professor and author and speaker. And she brings a Monday morning health tip every week, and you can sign up for that at her website, lisamarone.com, lisamarone.com. Lisa, thanks again for visiting with us today. We always love your insight.
You're welcome, Neil. Hope that was helpful.
It wasn't a pain at all. We love our time with Lisa. Tomorrow, we're going to talk music here in Connecting Faith. You want to be a part of that. It's going to be a great hour. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.